CheersCast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Hey, listen, you know that girl you were talking to?
Yep.
I swear I've seen her someplace before.
Well, she asked for Rebecca. Called her Becky. Must be old friends.
Yeah, I could explain all that.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, figure it out. Rebecca, who doesn't date, suddenly has this good-looking friend show up. A slender, boyish female friend with whom she probably sunbathed nude somewhere, perhaps on the Isle of Lesbos.
You ever get the test back on that dog that bit you?
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining us once again for the penultimate episode of Season 7 is the co-host of the SNL Nerds podcast, John Trumbull. What's up, John?
Afternoon, everybody. How you doing, Ryan?
Good, good. Which one of your two mutant heads am I talking to on this episode?
The small one attached to my neck. The other one, I'm not proud,
not proud of
the work I did in that.
Folks, we are, as I said, penultimate, we are on Season 7, Episode 21, Sisterly Love. This one is written by David Lloyd, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, April 27th, 1989. Sam flirts with a beautiful customer and discovers she is Susan Howe, Rebecca's sister, while Woody recognizes her as an actress starring in schlocky horror films. Rebecca and Susan had a bad falling out, and Sam thinks that if he can mend the damage between the sisters, he'll be able to get one, or hopefully both, in bed. Over a loud and argumentative lunch, Sam learns that the sisters' strife stems from Susan's history of stealing Rebecca's past boyfriends and seemingly any man she was attracted to. After Rebecca storms off, Sam implies that Rebecca likes him and warns Susan against coming after him, while privately hoping that's exactly what she does. Later, Sam confides in Rebecca that Susan wants him, and she agrees to a date with Sam in order to make Susan jealous. Sam's scheme goes awry, however, when Susan shows up before his scheduled date with Rebecca. They start to kiss in the office when Rebecca catches them. Rebecca is outraged by this additional betrayal and pulls a gun from the desk. Susan screams as Rebecca shoots her and fires 5 more shots for all the guys Susan took from her, including Sam. While Sam is freaking out, Rebecca enlists his help to move Susan's body. When they drag her out into the bar, Rebecca hits the lights and the rest of the Cheers gang surprises Sam. Turns out, Susan is alive, and the sisters concocted this whole prank to punish Sam for trying to manipulate them. But, in doing so, they actually rekindled their sisterly affection for each other, which Sam thinks he deserves some credit for, and something more than credit. All right, John, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, first of all, excellent summary. Loved it.
There's a lot more alliteration in my summary than I was expecting. I almost got tongue-tied a couple times.
You surprised yourself with your own writing.
I did.
This one is an old favorite, which is why I requested this episode when we were, you know, first discussing which episodes I could do this season. And I think if I was ranking, like, my top 10 Cheers episodes, this would probably be on the list. I think it's just one of the funniest episodes, and okay, I'm gonna be brutally honest here. I was like 16 when this first episode first aired, and Marcia Cross was very attractive to my 16-year-old eyes, so I think that's in the mix there as well.
So I was half your age, and she had the same effect on me. I just didn't quite know what was happening. you were probably a little bit more aware of why you were feeling.
I was very aware, yes.
But yeah, I remember seeing her, especially when she comes back in the purple leather jacket and the miniskirt, and me going, I don't know, what am I feeling? What is going on? I have never seen anyone this gorgeous before. And I already had a crush on Kirstie Alley at this time.
Yeah. Yeah, but, same. I mean, I'm more about, like, you know, the blue dress with the high built. It's just a very 80s look, and she's got kind of the big hair too. Mm-hmm. And I think you just like whatever was the look when you were like first discovering the opposite sex, that kind of you carry that with you the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I think there's that, and I'm sure that this is more like one of the episodes I taped, because like when I rewatched it, it was still very familiar. I knew it almost line for line.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I must have rewatched this episode more than normal. Mm-hmm. And please put the least creepy interpretation on that you can.
I'll try. But yeah, I am absolutely in the exact same boat. Like this is a very funny episode. It's got this great dramatic hook at the end that turns into this wonderful comedic beat, and it's a mm-hmm. very funny, very memorable episode on the plot. Just the fact that we're introducing Rebecca's sister, and this, mm-hmm. They don't even set up with Chekhov's gun, but like they fire a gun in this one many times.
Yeah.
And it's like holy crap! But it's still like I remember this episode. I was like, oh, Marcia Cross was so sexy. And it's kind of like going back to the Diane years. It's like the episode with Marky Post. I'm like, yeah, that was a good and funny episode, but I remember Marky Post how good looking she was.
Yeah, same here. And that was a previous episode that I commented on here. So yeah, we're charting my hormones all through this series. and this is like Marcia Cross, like, this is, I think, the first thing I ever saw her in. It's definitely pre-Melrose Place.
Which is the next thing I saw her in. And when I saw her in that show, I was like, oh, it's this woman. And then I was like, oh, she'd be crazy in this show. I just remember her in that. But,
and then much later, she was in Desperate Housewives. I didn't watch either of those shows on a regular basis, but I was aware that she was on those shows. And I was like, oh, hey, she's made a nice career for herself. And she's a talented lady. And I'm assuming she's still working on a regular basis.
I actually gave Desperate Housewives the old college try because mm-hmm. it had Marcia Cross, Terry Hatcher, and Felicity Huffman, and I loved all of those women at different points in mm-hmm. my life, and I was like, oh man, this is right on my alley. And then I got like two episodes and I'm like, yeah, it's not for me. It's just not. Okay, so we can talk more about our crushes and our teenage hormones, but getting mm-hmm. into the actual episode proper, for our teaser, and the first thing that I will note, I don't know why, but Norm already has two beers in front of him when the episode begins.
Does
in the
he
teaser.
Really?
He's got a full one in front of him and a half-drunk one right beside it.
Wow, you don't think that's somebody else's beer or anything? He's like nursing two beers?
They're right in front of him, and like if that was something else, it's like, okay, what was the scene before this? They must have cut something. But Rebecca comes out of the office and announces to the whole bar that she has found a new way to promote the bar, which draws groans mm-hmm. from everybody because they've heard this before. She's like, no. This you know, promotional campaign is going to be cutting edge. It's going to be hip. It's what people will want to hear. And she's like, Cheers is the bar that cares. So the new thing is that they will appoint a designated driver free of charge for any customer who feels impaired. And she asks for a volunteer. Initially, nobody raises a hand. She's like, come on. She has to drag it out. She has to pull. She's like, somebody has to be a little bit too drunk to drive. And finally, one guy's like, okay, I guess, and take me home. And she's like, well, thank you very much for this volunteer. Where do you live, sir? And he goes, Philadelphia. It's like, and she set herself up for this so much that she's on the hook. So she's like, I can't say no. I have to drive this man across several states to another city. And then to punctuate, she's like, what's your address? And he goes, it's a blue house. I'll know it when I see it.
Yeah, and I actually looked this episode up on the IMDb trivia, and one of the trivia items says, to travel from Boston to Philadelphia is approximately 308 miles and could take anywhere from 5.5 to 6.5 hours longer if you don't know which blue house is yours.
Yeah, exactly. She even mouths through the window to Sam something like, I have to go cover the bar, and he thinks, she's like, yeah, you're going to be gone all day whenever this happens.
And this was a pretty topical gag, because I think this was around the time that the concept of the designated driver became more popular in the country. I mean, I remember hearing more talk about it.
Yeah, because that'll be a fixture in a later season episode. That's a whole running thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we come back from the opening credits, Lilith comes in to tell Frasier that they have to drive her mother to her hair appointment, and Frasier makes the kind of obligatory mother-in-law joke about them needing to get the proper shade of blue for her.
Mm-hmm.
Lilith is upset because Frasier does this a lot, and she said you keep doing these snide, cliche, battle axe mother-in-law jokes. And he's apologizing. He's like, well, yeah, I just had to try and amuse my friends. And Norma Cliff, I'm like, that wasn't very funny, Frasier. And he looks so hurt, like betrayed when they say that. And then they ante up because they're like, if you really want a funny one, you should have said, you told her some of the other jokes you've been telling us. And they start recycling off some other gags that Frasier has made about his mother-in-law. And he's just like, shut up, you guys. Why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, and Lilith is like, hey, I have a sense of humor about my mother. Now say goodbye to your friends. You're grounded for the next 6 weeks.
And he very petulantly just says, shoot, and walks out.
Hard to believe that this couple doesn't go the distance. I don't think that's a big spoiler. I think most people know that. And I also want to say, I also want to note, because like Woody enters right after that, yep. Woody's mullet is coming in very nicely.
Yeah, yes, it will. That will be a fixture too.
Yeah, we're getting into definite mullet territory on Woody. I noticed that.
Yeah, and Woody enters with some sense of urgency, but not as much as Sam would have preferred, because Woody tells Sam that his car alarm is going off, and Sam flips. He's like, this isn't just any car, this is my vet. You didn't tell me sooner. And he rushes to the door and stops on a dime when the aforementioned beautiful Susan Howe walks in. And yes. Completely forgets about his car. He just takes her in the same momentum and walks her down to the front table.
Yeah.
And Woody's like, what about your car? He's like, well, you're taking care of that, and just tosses his keys to Woody.
It's such a great gag. It's perfectly executed by Ted Danson, who by this point, he has utterly perfected how he's playing Sam Malone. He is so good in this episode. I was just... he's hitting every note, and it just really shows like what Sam's priorities are. It's like, you know,
he's
hair, car, women.
but he is capable of this surprising amount of grace in his movements in some of these episodes. The way he goes through a door, comes back, or anything like this, and the way he just like all his momentum. He doesn't seem to lose his speed. He just redirects it instantly to take this woman to a table and sits down with her.
Ted Danson, he did have a real grace to him. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Body Heat, but he's playing like a DA. He's like, he's taking dancing lessons, and he's very good, and he has a great physicality in a lot of his Cheers episodes, and he has some great physicality at the end of this episode, too.
Body Heat, another movie that I saw when I was probably too young to see that one, but anyway, back at the bar, Cliff and Norm are there, and Cliff has his elbow up on the bar, his bare elbow, and he's picking at it, and he kind of absentmindedly asks how Sammy always spots the good-looking babes first. And Norm says, oh, because he doesn't spend his time picking dead skin off his elbows. And Cliff sort of indignantly says, are you going to do it for me? Like,
I love this gag, one, because it's such a weird esoteric gag to put into a network sitcom. It's like, it's the sort of thing that people do in life, but you never see people on TV doing that sort of mundane thing.
Right.
But I just love John Ratzenberger's read of, what are you going to do it for me? You know, just the icy way he says that to Norm, and you hardly ever see much tension between Norm and Cliff, but here he's just like, get off my back.
Exactly. So Sam is hitting on this woman, and she mentions that she's there to see Becky Howe. At this point, Woody comes back, and Woody kind of drags Sam away, and he swears that he has seen this woman before. And Sam's like, well, she asked for Becky Howe. They must be old friends or something. And then Cliff says, well, that explains a lot, because they know that Rebecca doesn't date, and suddenly this attractive female comes in to see her. A slender, boyish female, he describes her. And he's like,
I disagree with that description.
I do, especially the way she was filling out that blue miniskirt. But Cliff mentions that he thinks they sunbathed naked somewhere on the Isle of Lesbos, and he has to drag that out, Lesbos.
Like, yeah.
And crude, and that is, you know, certainly that joke would probably have problems today with its insinuation. But I've always yeah. liked and remembered that line just for the way he says Lesbos.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think we're supposed to sympathize with Cliff.
No,
on
of course
line.
Not.
I mean, you know, at this point, we generally pretty consistently portray Cliff as like an ass who's wrong about most
right.
things, and. Yeah. So he's obviously wrong here.
And it's also not the first time someone has posited that Rebecca is a lesbian. Then we find out that the woman is Susan Howe, Rebecca's sister, and Sam flips at the idea. He goes, I love sisters. I love the whole idea of them.
Yeah.
It's just, there's really, and when it comes to Sam, there's only one way to take that, because it's such a dumb statement.
Well, and also, like, we as the audience, we know Sam
yes.
so well
yeah.
at this point. We are, like, a step or two ahead. We already know what Sam is thinking. He's
right.
he's thinking, you know, he's been trying to hook up with Rebecca for, like, two seasons now mm. on the show, two full seasons, which was one full season longer than he was trying to hook up with Diane before
right.
he got anywhere
right.
there. So, you know, already we know that Rebecca's kind of a tougher nut to crack, as it
right.
were. And now he's setting his sights even higher. He's like, oh, I'm going to hook up with Rebecca and her sister Susan.
And Woody, of course, though, recognizes Susan as an actress from Night of the Mutants.
She's basically a scream queen. Is the implication? You know,
yeah.
she's done a lot of schlocky horror movies mm-hmm. and things like that. She's like a Leanna Quigley or a Brink Stevens, or
yeah.
I think those were the big names at the time.
Sure. She mentions that Rebecca and Susan haven't seen each other in 3 years. They had this falling out.
Mm-hmm.
Susan is hoping that they can kiss and make up, which tickles Sam the idea, because grown-up sisters kissing and making up just warms my cockles.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if I've ever heard that. I've heard, like, the cockles of your heart, but I don't know if I've ever just heard it singular, like, warms my cockles.
Yeah, I think they're just doing that for the obvious.
Yeah, the play on.
Yeah.
Sam goes back and he knows that Carla hates her sister, and he asks, what would he have to do to get the two of them together? And she goes, ask me to come down and identify her body.
And I also love the nonchalant way when Sam says, like, hey, Carla, you hate your sister, right? And she's like, yeah, why?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, she's so matter of fact about it. And
right.
continuity nut that I am. I also have to wonder if it's like, okay, is that the sister of Carla's, who was also played by Rhea Perlman, who was like dating Cliff for a little while?
Right.
Some other sister
Annette,
that we've
yeah.
never seen or talked about before.
Annette, yeah.
I don't know. I'm very curious if they have that in mind. Probably
right.
not. But
and I know, I bet, because we see a sister in a later episode when they go to Carla's house to meet her mom, and that sister, and Carla clearly hates that one, so maybe that's the
one. Oh, okay, I'd forgotten that.
But Sam thinks that he can be greatly rewarded if he brings these two sisters together.
Mm-hmm.
Carla doesn't think he stands a chance of scoring both of them when he hasn't gotten more than a polite kick in the teeth from Rebecca.
Yeah.
Cliff is like, oh, Carla, do I have to explain women to you? And she goes, and she, like, the implication. She's like, yeah, Cliff, sure. Explain women to me.
And I really like this moment, because it's a different note for the Cliff and Carla relationship. Is, you know, Carla's actually, like, being kind of playful. She's like, okay, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, yeah, because her go-to move would just be to spit something hostile back at him to
right.
be sarcastic, or to just physically hit him with a tray or something like that. But instead she's
right.
like, no, I'm going to give you a little rope. Let's see how you hang yourself with this stupid comment.
Yeah, and she's got this big grin on her face. She's like, oh, this will be good.
Yeah,
Cliff, why don't you explain women to? And then she goes back to it
yeah.
later. She's like, so Cliff, tell me more about women.
Yeah.
It's just really fun, because it's a different note for them to play. And I bet the actors really appreciated that. Because,
yeah.
you know, by this point, there was the clear formula of, you know, Cliff says something, Carla has a zinger.
Right,
and
right.
It's good to vary that sort of thing up.
Yeah, because initially Cliff senses the danger, and he's like, Sammy, why don't you take this? You need to
traverse
him. And then there's a great little exchange where Sam's like, Carla, you don't have a lot of experience in this, but sometimes women get really happy. And she kind of looks.
And Carla just sort of rolls her eyes.
She's like, okay, that's true, but you didn't have to say it like that. And it's
right, right.
And And then after Sam is like, he puts on his cologne or something like that, and he talks about mm-hmm. how he's going to get them both. And then you think the scene is over, but no, Carla's not done. She walks back over to Cliff, and she's like, so, tell me more about women. What is your explanation?
Oh, well, they're soft, and they smell nice, and sometimes they wash cars wearing nothing but a cowboy hat. And I'm just like, oh, okay, a little peek into Cliff's life here.
And he's like, sorry, I must have drifted away for a second. Rebecca comes in and Sam like covers up her eyes. He's like, wait, I got a surprise for you. And she goes, take your hand away. Your perfume or your cologne is burning my eyeballs.
Yeah, because he just splashed in his hand like yeah. a few seconds before.
So.
And very funny. And then like when he takes his hand off and he's like, I've got a surprise for you. You instantly feel the ice between
yeah.
the two.
Yeah, Rebecca is frosty and short with her. Mm-hmm. Just there's weird tension that Sam is like, hey, this is a moment. Come on.
Yeah.
And Rebecca can't wait for Susan to leave. She has no interest in making up. And Sam is like, look, let's why don't the three of us go somewhere where we can be more comfortable and settle this? I know this great little hot tub club. And she's like, Sam, she's like, no, I was joking. So he whisks them off to Melville's, and Rebecca stops him on the stairs, and she goes, why are you pretending to be interested? And she asks if this is a ploy to get her into bed, and Sam goes, Rebecca, please, I'm thinking about the both of you.
Yeah, great line. And the next scene, we're up at Melville's. Do you remember when they introduced the Melville set? It had to be well before this, I'm assuming, right?
I believe, because this actually came up, I believe it was the first episode of this season.
Of this season? Of season 7?
I think so.
Oh, it was that late. Wow.
I think so. I have to go to, because I know I looked it up or it became a part of discussion. Mm-hmm. But I think it was the first episode of this season.
Okay, that's pretty late in the show that they finally established Melville's.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know the first season was like all in the bar. Second season, we see Diane's apartment
right.
in the premiere, the second season premiere. And then they gradually open up. Like we see Fraser and Lois' townhouse and things like that. And, you know, they occasionally establish other locations. We see Cliff's apartment. We see Carla's home.
Yeah.
You know, but this was the first time I remembered seeing Melville's in the episodes I've rewatched for the podcast. So I was wondering, is this new or is this
something? We've been there a few times, but it is pretty recent. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine they'd build a major new set this late in the season, but you know, if they knew it's something they're going to come back to, you can amortize the cost. So,
yeah. And when they're up at the table in Melville, Susan offers her food to Rebecca. Rebecca thinks it's a trick to make her fat like she used to be, and Susan calls her the Goodyear blimp. All of this kind of takes on new meaning, like when you know Kirstie Alley's history after the show.
So just a little
weirder context. But then Rebecca makes a crack about Susan wetting herself in front of the school when she was 6. And they get into this whole, shut up. And Rebecca does a long drawn out, shut up, which she will do again. That kind of becomes a thing because she does that to Sam, I think, in season 10. I think it's one of the episodes when they're trying to conceive or something. And anyway, this is where we find out that the rift stems from the fact that Susan was always taking Rebecca's boyfriends. Anytime she was into a guy, Susan poached them. And there is a notable close-up on Sam during this discussion where you just see the gears click into place and the light bulb go off.
And I love that it's just keyed off of Ted Danson's expression. It's totally nonverbal. It's mm-hmm. just you know what is in Sam's head because we know this character so well at this point.
Yeah.
And yeah, we know he's had designs on both of them, but now it's clicked into place how he's going to do it.
Right.
So
Rebecca gets mad and stomps off. She's like, nice try, Sam, but you can't bring us back together. She goes back down to work. And Sam says something like, he's like, I don't think it was fair what she said to you, but I'm just going to warn you, you better not try to hit on me or something like that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And this is where he's like, oh yeah, Rebecca's got a big time crush on me or something like that.
Yeah. She's got a big old crush.
Big old crush, yeah. And my initial read was, oh, she's into him and she's confirming everything that Rebecca said.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, thinking about it more and thinking about like what happens later in the episode, I think she actually does read Sam correctly and knows exactly what he's doing here, and that will bear out like when we see like the finale of like how she and Rebecca eventually come together. I think that playful smile that she gives him is like a little bit of leading him on, like, oh really, this is going to be your tactic.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've always read her interest in him as sincere at this point, but yeah, it's debatable when exactly Rebecca and Susan get together and compare notes. So I always assumed it happens sometime in the gap when they're both away from the bar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that's when they come up with their grand master plan, but.
Right. Later on, Frasier comes in and almost like creeps back into the bar and says, I snuck out of the house. I just love the fact that he had to do that. I love the fact that ostensibly Lilith, she says she grounded him and he's in this bit of punishment for the way he's been behaving, the way he's been treating her mother. And the first chance he gets, he comes back to the bar. In a later episode, when he jokes about having a drinking problem, it's like, yeah, this isn't normal behavior. So,
I don't know.
I mean, I guess
we hardly ever see Frasier drinking to excess, though. I think he gravitates to the bar more for the camaraderie.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he wouldn't want to admit it, but these are his friends. But yeah, there is something about the place that it is. But yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this is where they update him on what's going on with Sam and Susan. And Frasier even recognizes Susan from Night of the Mutants. He says that he and Lilith watched it last week. He thinks movies with scenes of violence and, you know, graphic disembowelment, these can help relieve the stress of modern-day life. Plus, it scared away Lilith's mother. So it was like the first time she went home before 9 or something.
It's a funny note because, like, you'd expect Woody to be like the horror fan,
and we
see Woody Harrelson playing those notes. Like, you know, when he has to identify Susan, he does it through his covering his face and looking through his hands. And it somewhat snacks of just giving Frasier something to do, but it is interesting. And I couldn't help but wonder watching this. I'm like, I don't know if the Frasier spinoff would insist on the therapeutic value of horror movies. I feel like he'd more just condemn them out of hand because he tended to be a little more snobby on Frasier just because it was funnier. Yeah.
But I love the way they draw these two kind of plots, even though his is a very, very minor subplot, but they draw him into the main plot because he says that he's a fan and he actually asks Susan for her autograph. But he says, please make it out to Mother Sternin. And I want you to write, I know where you live, and I'm coming to get you.
Yeah, and Susan just kind of shrugs and dutifully writes that out. I also liked, Marcia Cross had a nice note where when Frasier asked her for her autograph, she's like, oh, yes. And you can tell, like, she doesn't get asked for her autograph much because she's just not sort of at that level.
Sam briefs the guys or debriefs the guys on what happened upstairs and tells them like this whole thing about how he told Susan that Rebecca is into him and he had her eating out of his hand, and Cliff kind of looking off in the middle distance like, was she wearing a cowboy hat? And Norm's like, it was a figure of speech, Cliffy, and he's like, she could have been. It's like,
yeah.
And Susan does this scene from her movie where she screams, no, I'm too young to die, and does this little scream thing, and everybody applauds, and they like give her a round of applause. She's like, you guys are great. And Sam comes back, and he's like, what did I miss? And Woody goes, have you had her scream for me yet? And Sam goes, later, Woody, later. Which is not, I don't like that one.
Yeah, he's so wonderfully self-assured.
Yeah. So Sam goes into the office and tells Susan that he tells Rebecca that Susan asked him out, and Rebecca freaks out and she thinks that Susan must think Rebecca is attracted to Sam. What would give her that impression? Sam's like, who knows? And he's like, what would I have to gain by telling her that?
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, if we're trying to figure out when Rebecca and Susan tumble the game, I feel like Rebecca's probably at least partially tumbling because she's pretty wise to Sam's ways by this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this before, but they actually set up Susan earlier in the series. There is some foreshadowing, and I think it was the season finale of season six, or maybe
no, I think it was the one where they go to paint her apartment.
Yeah,
where Sam and Norm go to paint her apartment, and
Rebecca says like, "Well, my sister was Miss San Diego," and she's like,
"You're right.
Oh, that has to be Susan, because Sam tells her
because they click over that because Sam's like, yeah, I've got an older brother who's better at me than ever, who's better than me at everything, yeah."
Right, and Sam asks her in this episode, he's like, oh, are there any others of you? And she's like, nope, I'm the only one. So I'm like, oh, okay, so Susan was Miss San Diego at some point.
That is, I forgot about that. Yeah, and Miss San Diego, she would have transitioned to acting from that. That makes total sense. I knew there was another reference to her, but I couldn't remember if it was before this or after this. Good catch.
Yeah, I knew it was like one of the times when they were first bonding as friends, and I noticed it.
Yeah.
It stuck in my head when I was like putting together my Cheers Frasier timeline.
Right.
So, which I noodled with a bit more today because I was in the mood for it. So,
so anyway, this is where, Rebecca is upset that Susan does this every time, and this is where she's like, if only there was some way to get her back, and Rebecca concocts it. She's like, if we really want to hurt her, I'll give you the date that you've been begging me for. Come back and meet me tonight and everything. And she's like, when she asked you out, Sam, did you say yes? And he goes, yeah, but I could kick myself for that. He's like,
again, so good. Kid dancing's so good.
So we cut now, it's closing time, and Sam explains to the guys that Rebecca's going home to get ready for their date. Sam postponed his date with Susan, but he's planning to see her in a couple of hours after his date with Rebecca. And then he's like, tomorrow I can debrief you guys and compare and contrast the sisters.
And that's when this stuff gets really interesting.
Right, and everybody leaves, and Carla turns off the lights as she's walking out the door and looks back at Sam. And it's not something you notice unless you've seen this episode before and know what to look for. And then Sam is getting ready, and then Susan comes in, as I mentioned, wearing a purple short leather jacket. Very much of the time, but just that color on her. I'm like, nice.
And I think like probably even a shorter skirt than she was wearing before.
Somehow, yes.
Yeah.
And she comes in and she's early for the date, and Sam is trying to like do the mental math. He's like, oh no, like wait, Rebecca's is on her way. And she's coming onto him strong. He's like, usually I go for this stuff in a big way. And he runs to the office. He runs so fast, in fact, that he like propels himself by grabbing onto the rail of the bar, and you see the bar move a little bit.
Oh, really?
You see the set of the bar move as he pulls himself to like propel himself into the office even faster.
Because I think they had the bar set, the bar itself, at least partially on casters, so they could move it out of the way for certain shots.
Right. So. Yeah. It's not like a permanent thing, and that's why he's able to move it like an inch or so. But so he darts into the office, and he's trying to call Rebecca. She's not answering, and he's sort of desperate. And Susan follows him in there. She takes the phone away. They start to kiss. Before long, Sam is not resisting anymore. He's going right into it. She rips his shirt open. He's got his hands up her back of her jacket. And Rebecca walks in, and she's like, Susan! And she starts to lose it, and Sam pushes Susan away, tries to explain, but he's like, wait, I can explain. And then he stops. He's like, wait, my finger's caught in your bra. He's
like, yeah.
Which now that I think about it, that might be my home run, because that's always a line. It's a line that I always forget. And then when I hear it again, I'm like, man, that's a good moment.
And it's not necessary to the plot or the story or anything like that. It's just a nice little grace note in there and it just gives them a little extra bit of business to play. And it just gives you an extra laugh, and that's really good.
Yeah. Susan says that Susan and Rebecca start fighting, and Susan says she's actually glad that Rebecca caught them because Rebecca deserves to be hurt. And Rebecca very haughtily is like, no, now it's Susan Howe's turn to hurt. And she pulls out a gun from the desk drawer, and Sam's like, what are you doing with that? And Susan...
No, he just goes, hey, that's a gun.
That's a gun.
Just the way he says it cracks me up. And also, I like how that Rebecca is not that grave an actress. She's doing a little too big.
She's handing it up, but yeah. But speaking of actresses, because now Susan screams, no, I'm too young to die, and screams, and it's like, oh, I've already heard her scream that exact same thing.
Mm-hmm,
And Rebecca shoots her, and she drops. Now, of course... Like, whether you believe what was happening or not, this is an NBC primetime sitcom. There's no blood splatter. There's no effect or anything. She just crumples to the ground. But Sam is like, holy cow! And he starts almost crying. And Rebecca starts naming off the boyfriends, like Dan Buttinger, and this is for whoever. And she fires another shot. And then she's like, and this one is for Sam Malone. And she fires the last three bullets. So Sam was worth a lot more. And Sam is like... somehow curling himself into a fetal position while staying on his feet. But he's
He's curling up like he hasn't gone to the bathroom in 24 hours, and he's just like, he's imploding.
Yeah, it looks like he's doing everything he can to prevent his bowels from just collapsing on him and everything.
Yeah, because this is
because
like he's half horny and like all terrified at this moment, and you know the evening is turned. Marcia Cross also has a nice bit of business where she like she jumps a little bit with each shot.
Her body shakes with every shot.
Until like maybe the last one.
Right.
and Kirstie Alley was just like she sees how much Sam is panicking. She's like, Sam, what's the matter? What is it? Because I killed my sister? And then, oh, well, it's done. And it's, she just throws that away so much. It's so hilarious.
Yeah. And so he's practically in tears at this point, just completely stunned, speechless. He can't verbalize anything.
But
she bosses him. She takes control. She's like, grab her by the hands. We gotta get rid of this body. And they pull. Sam drags her out into the dark bar, and when they get through the door, this is where Rebecca turns on the lights, and Sam looks back, and everybody jumps up from behind the bar. We've got Carla, Woody, Norman Cliff, and Frasier, and Lilith. So the whole crew is there, and they're like, Sammy! He just, like, drops Susan. He's like, she did it! He's pointing to Rebecca.
And Carla says something like, oh boy, when you said you were going to polish them both off, I didn't think you meant this.
You're going to knock them off one at a time, Yeah. And he's like, no, you don't understand. She's really, and Susan says from beneath the jacket, she's like, I'm dead. And Sam falls back into the tree, the potted tree behind them, as he's just like scared and everything. And then Susan gets up, and Rebecca's like, wasn't my sister a wonderful actress? And they're hugging, and everybody's cheering at Sam's expense. And Sam is just like pacing in front of them, just like, this was not funny.
He's like, this could cause serious psychological damage. Am I right, Lilith? Because he thinks Lilith would be the most sympathetic to him. And Lilith just goes, no, Sam, that was funny.
which I think gets the biggest laugh from the studio audience. And Sam kind of like retreats over by the hallway. And Rebecca's like, Sam, are you okay? And he's like, I'm hurt. He's like, there. And Rebecca and Susan, they confide in him that fending off his antics brought them together, and they haven't been this close since they were kids. And Rebecca's
and they're like arm in arm, so they've obviously made amends and like, let go of whatever's in the past.
Yeah, and she's like, we're grateful, Sam. He very slowly turns his head, and he's like, how grateful.
Yeah, and that's it. Boom. Episode's done.
Yeah.
It's almost an abrupt ending, but I think it works beautifully. We don't really need any more denouement of it, you know, because we got the peak. The audience kind of course, figures out before Sam does that this isn't real and that they've turned the tables on him. And I love how everyone else in the bar is just ready to sell Sam down the river just because they think it'll be funny. You know, they would have loved to see him score with both of the Howe sisters, but... This is funnier and probably more likely. So yeah. They go with that.
It's good. They're willing to turn coat pretty much without much provocation. They go where the action is. So
yeah, exactly.
As a bit of trivia, it's a little known fact, as Cliff would say. Mm-hmm. I found this out from the IMDb trivia section, but this episode was conceived as a season-ending cliffhanger with Sam proposing to Susan. But this was obviously rewritten because A, they thought that it was out of character for Sam, and B, there were rumors that Kirstie Alley was leaving the show. But the writers wanted to shut that down. They didn't want to add any fuel to that. And maybe if they had ended with this cliffhanger, like, people would have thought that Marsha Cross was going to replace her permanently or something like that. And the writers were like, we don't even want to add fuel to that. So they changed it. I also think Sam proposing to Rebecca's sister would have been this mirror reflection of the end of season one with Diane and Sam's brother, but probably too similar. Like, okay, you're just repeating yourself. So,
We already had a season ending cliffhanger involving a proposal with the whole Janet Elridge storyline.
Right. The wedding, the season before that with Diane and Fraser possibly getting married. So
I read this on the IMDb trivia too, or IMDb if I want to say it correctly, and I'd never heard this before, and I'm like, okay, wow, I never heard that was a possible cliffhanger, and I certainly never heard rumors that Kirstie Alley was out of the show. I can't imagine why they would dump her at this point, because her character was really working at this point, and she'd put in two seasons. The show was still popular. I think it was still like maybe the number one or number two sitcom at the time.
What year did the movie Look Who's Talking come out? Do you know offhand?
That was 88 or 89, somewhere around there.
Okay, so she had done that around the same time. That was a big hit.
Yeah.
If there was speculation that she was going to leave to go do movies, if she had a bigger film future.
Maybe.
I'm speculating. Again, I had never heard this until I read this particular little tidbit, and maybe this is apocryphal. It could just be bad intel. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that it's apocryphal, because, like, you know, I would read TV Guide every week at the time. That was still a thing, and I don't remember any rumors at the time about Kirstie Alley being replaced. And yeah, that just seems weird. Another interesting trivia tidbit I saw on the IMDb was that Joan Severance was originally cast as Susan. But she had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts, which,
and
again, I've never heard before.
I think Joan Severance might resemble Kirstie Alley more. Like, they might have had more of a sisterly resemblance, maybe?
Yeah, but I think Marsha Cross looks enough like her that I could buy her as Rebecca's sister. And I don't know, I feel like it's a very different episode with Joan Severance, because Joan Severance wouldn't really have read younger than Rebecca, I don't think.
No,
If I'm remembering what she looked like in this era. And I think the only thing I can think of, I think the first thing I ever saw Joan Severance in was that Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder movie, See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
That's
she's like one of the evil criminals that they're after in that.
Alongside Kevin Spacey. He's her partner in that one.
That's right. Yeah, and they did the show Wise Guy together, too. Yeah, yeah. And that's the first thing I remember ever seeing Joan Severance in.
And Joan Severance was a knockout. She's gorgeous, but...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I gotta say, Marsha Cross oozes sexuality in this, in a way that doesn't feel dated. Like, her sexiness is contemporary, and it seems very modern at the time. But
she's also got in the mix, she's got a little bit of the spunky kid sister vibe,
yes,
too.
Very much, yeah.
And I don't get that from Joan Severance.
No.
I can't see Joan Severance playing that. Joan Severance is more like femme fatale type. And so I think the episode would have lost something with Joan. I think it worked out well. I think it worked out how it should have.
On the other hand, I mean, had they gone with the other storyline, which may or may not have actually been true, maybe Joan Severance would have been a better candidate for a long-term or possible long-term romance between Sam and the character.
That's true. So. That's true. And yeah, which you saying that makes me think, okay, well, maybe the scheduling conflicts was just a convenient excuse. Maybe they
rewrote it.
They reconceived the character a bit when they realized, oh, this story isn't quite working.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we reconceive Susan, maybe Susan is a different character type, and maybe suddenly Joan Severance wasn't quite right for it anymore.
Yeah.
That sounds very plausible. And, you know, you could just say it's scheduling conflict, so it's no reflection on the actress.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, this is all just 100% pure speculation on my part. I have no inside knowledge. I didn't find these bits of trivia out until a couple hours
ago. Right, right.
When I thought to look up this episode on IMDb. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Getting into our superlative categories for Norm's tab. Now, I mentioned at the end of the last episode that between this episode and the season finale, Norm only need to have 5 beers between these 2 episodes in order to have 100 beers across all of season 7.
Wow.
Well, he had 7 beers just in this episode.
So, wow!
So he is now up to 102 beers just for the season, but 689 for the series.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Again, I don't know why, but he had two just in the teaser, and then there was a lot of time jumping in this one. So yeah.
Yeah. Do you know how many? What season he's had the most beers in? Offhand.
He had more than 100 last season too.
Okay.
I'll have to after I finish up the next episode, because I haven't done the beer count for next episode. But once I know how many he has total for this season, I can compare it to last season.
So Norm is very possibly getting worse.
I don't even want to guess. I want to say maybe
we're gonna have to have that intervention between seasons.
I want to say maybe he had 103 in season 6, but I don't remember. I'll go back to it and look later.
Oh yeah, so. You're doing the Lord's work calculating all that.
Sure. Yeah. Who was your employee of the week?
It's got to be Sam. This is Sam's episode all the way. I think Marcia Cross and Kiersey Eller are both doing great work in the episode. They're hilarious with what they have to work with. But Ted Danson has to play so many different notes, and he hits them all. And him saying like, "I love sisters. I love the whole idea of sisters." She's got a big old crush on me. This is my moaning Lisa. Have you heard her screams, Sam? Later, Woody. Later. I mean, and just at the very end, he's like, "Hey, that's a gun." and he's like, "I'm not talking to you." All of them just so funny. And yeah, it's Ted Danson's episode all the way, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm really glad you said that, because I agree with everything you said, and it lets me off the hook for picking Susan. just because I like to reward guest stars when they contribute something significant and substantive.
Yeah.
And I can't take my eyes off her in this episode. So
she's on the
merits.
And she's funny too.
She is. She's very good.
She's not just eye candy. She has a comedic presence.
Yeah.
And I know Desperate Housewives was like a sort of a half comedic series, but I would like to see Marcia Cross do more comedy. And actually, now that I think of it, Melrose Place got kind of campy too. So maybe it's an absurd statement to say, like, I wish she'd done more comedy. I wish she'd done more sitcom work.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have minded if she'd come back at some point in Cheers. That would have been fun if they'd come up with another story for her.
Yeah. On the merits, Sam deserves the award, but I'm giving it to the pretty lady. I am that type of person today, I guess. Sorry about that, but yeah.
Shallow and horny. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, Sam Malone salutes that.
There you go. What was your home run, or what did you think was the best moment?
This was tough, because I find this a really funny episode. And yeah, most of my possible home runs were Sam lines. Mm-hmm. I think I do have to give an honorable mention to Kiersey Alley for the, you know, what, because I killed my sister and, oh, well, it's done.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, oh, I took the garbage out too soon or something like that. I think my favorite line of the episode is where Rebecca says to Sam, "Is this another attempt to just get me into bed?" And he goes, "Please, Rebecca, I'm thinking of both of you."
Yeah.
And I just love the double meaning of that. And I love that Rebecca's not quite wise to it yet. But we as the audience are. So it's so funny. It's so in character for Sam.
It's a great moment. And he gives that look to the guys at the bar, too, after he says
it. Yeah. And he doesn't play it so obvious where you're just like, oh, Rebecca's an idiot not for catching on.
Yeah.
He says it just neutrally enough that you get the double meaning, but he's not making a meal out of it.
Yeah.
So that was my home run.
I would give a runner up to the moment I mentioned where he gets his finger caught in her bra as he's trying to explain that it's not what it looks like.
Yeah.
I would give a runner up to Frasier when he sneaks back in and goes, I snuck out of the house, just because the way he sounds when he says that. But I think my home run is the moment at the end when he's caught and everything and they're laughing at him and he goes, that's not funny. And he's like, this is the kind of thing that would traumatize a person, right, Lilith? And she's like, no, it was really funny, Sam.
Yeah, that's a big laugh in the episode. So yeah, that's and it's not a big episode for Lilith. If like B.B. Newworth hadn't been available, they could have written her out very easily.
Right.
But thank God she didn't. They didn't, and that she was around. So because it works really well, and you know, it's no wonder that they made her a regular.
Of course, yeah. Oh, well, that is it for Season 7, Episode 21. Thank you very much for coming back on the show, John. And why don't you tell the listeners where else they can find you?
Well, thanks again for having me. It's always a pleasure. I mean, it's a highlight. I get to, you know, come on this show at least twice a season and get to talk about one of my favorite sitcoms of all time. If you liked what I had to say in this episode, you'd like to hear me pontificate more about pop culture and stuff like that, I have a podcast called The SNL Nerds with my buddy Darren Patterson, where we watch episodes of Saturday Night Live as they come out and we critique them sketch by sketch. And during the summer hiatus, which we're in right now as we're recording this, we talk about movies starring SNL alums. And I just found out today that Beck Bennett from SNL is going to be playing Steve Lombard in the new Superman movie. So,
oh, wow.
Oh yay! We can watch the new James Gunn Superman movie when that comes out, and
nice,
because that has an SNL connection now. So I'm excited about that.
Nice, very cool.
So listen for that in 2025, and in the meantime, just listen to the podcast. We're on the Non-Productive Podcast Network, so just Google SNL Nerds and Non-Pro, and you should be able to find us.
Very cool. Thank you again for coming back on the show. And thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and until next time, no, I'm too young to die!
Ah! It's always been Susan. My entire life, it has been Susan.
I'm glad you saw us. You deserve to be hurt.
No, sister. I don't hurt anymore. I am way beyond hurt.
Don't be silly now, girls. Please.
And now it is Susan Howe's turn to hurt.
Hey, that's a gun.
It ain't licorice.
No, come on. Let's talk about this. No. Now, this is silly. This.
No, please. I'm too young to die.
Rebecca. Ah! Holy cow!
That was for Dan Buttinger. And this is for Jeff Carnahan. Ooh. And Mike Dietz. And Sam Malone.
Oh, boy.
What is it, Sam?
Oh.
What, because I killed my sister?
Oh.
I didn't mean to do that anyway. Oh, well, it's done.